Hello and welcome, fellow awesomeologists, to Awesomeology. I'm Sue.
And I'm Ben, and in this episode, we'll be talking about some of the questions you can ask yourself to help find your purpose.
Yeah. It's just a rough, it's a rough go.
Struggled with
getting
openly
in here, but we're here now, and it's going to be fine. And we are here, you know, with special thanks to Mark Manson, who does not know we're doing this, and does not likely listen to this podcast. Although he'll be probably Googles things with his name on it or the titles of the articles he's written. So he might find us.
So, he mirrors people, right?
Yeah. So cheers to you, Mark Manson, author of The Subtle Art of Not Giving an F. A-F.
I was wondering what you were going to do.
Yeah, I was too. So that is a book that he wrote, and he wrote a very smart article I came across. So we'll share a link in the notes. So we thought it'd be interesting to go through and start to answer these questions for ourselves. But what I did not tell you, because I thought it'd be more fun if I told everybody at the same time, is I came across this article as I was writing, because I had what I will forever sort of associate now that you and I have had this conversation about how you feel about some of these things. I had a very Ben Bauer moment where I'm like, am I full of crap? I was talking about my purpose and I was writing that whole piece of it. And I thought, is this all lies? And am I full of crap right now? And so I went to look for how do I find my purpose, even though I think that I understand it. Yeah. I think I wanted a quick fix. Get me a Cosmo poll that I can quick take and you tell me.
Yeah.
Kind of situation. So I came across this article, which is called Seven Strange Questions That Help You Find Your Life Purpose. And a lot of it resonated with me. I did also take some quizzes, just so you know.
And nice.
It all came out the same. So
yeah.
I am full of crap, just not in this particular.
I thought you were going to say I'm Hufflepuff, but that's a different quiz.
No, I'm Gryffindor.
Oh, okay.
How very dare you? Have you taken the Harry Potter quiz? Do you know what house you are?
I have. I think I'm Slytherin. I don't know. I have through my wife. Like she was doing it for everyone in our family.
Yeah.
She did it for herself. Then our son did it. And then she did it for me.
Okay.
But also, what is it? Slytherin, Hufflepuff.
I'm going to pretend I don't know, but then I'm going to say it. Slytherin, Hufflepuff, Gryffindor, Ravenclaw.
Ravenclaw is the other one that I couldn't remember. Yeah, I'm pretty sure I'm Slytherin. Anyway,
I would definitely give you more of like a Ravenclaw.
Yeah.
But
I honestly don't remember. So you may be right.
Yeah. I don't know.
Slytherin is maybe just the one I want to be a part of.
Because that's that cool, a little bit evil.
Right. Yeah.
Sexy kind of thing but you're just a nice guy. Maybe you're a Hufflepuff.
Anyway, we probably shouldn't talk about Harry Potter the whole time.
No, probably not.
And maybe we should remind new listeners, first time listeners, why we're talking about life purpose.
Maybe. I like it.
You
do
were
it.
Writing, and what Sue was writing was our book that we're collaborating on. That's got several aspects of purpose in it. For those of you who maybe are hearing this for the first time, we're writing a book all about purpose. Purpose in your work, purpose in your life, purpose in marketing, all kinds of purpose.
Purpose.
How many times can I say?
We have said the word purpose so many times, it doesn't sound like a word anymore. Purpose.
Right.
Yes.
And so to get to that end of having a book written, Sue and I have to have a lot of conversations like this. So we had this idea to capture some of it in this special edition of our podcast to... it's kind of like checking a bunch of boxes for us, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like brainstorming and recording it.
Right.
Writing a little bit and recording it. And just sharing some ideas. So
and working things out.
Working things out.
Yeah.
Anyway, so let's dive in, huh?
Let's do it. So we are going to go through all seven of these questions.
Yeah.
We will also share a link to this article. I think I already said that.
Yep.
I think it's going to be fun to hear your answers. I'm excited.
Yeah, we'll see. I'll do my best.
Make it fun. Will you make it fun, please?
No fun allowed. And yeah, reading the link will help you, reading the article at the link will help you understand why this first question is, Sue, what's your favorite flavor of poop sandwich?
Well, first of all.
Also interesting, taken out of context.
Yes, I would like to point out I do not like poop sandwiches. But as the article points out, everybody eats a poop sandwich every so often.
Right.
So it's about.
Does something unpleasant, right?
Yes. It's about what kind of unpleasantness can you deal with? I'll tell you what, man. This makes me think back to when I was a kid. My mother was a nurse, and she wanted so much for me to be interested in being a nurse. And I knew that there was so much about her job I could never do. Mm-hmm. So she, you know, and like, I think it's the poop sandwich thing that actually makes me think of this, because so specifically my mother worked in nursing homes. And when I reflected on what she did, which aside from some of the scatological, duties related to being a nursing home nurse, end of life care. There was a lot about her job that I looked at and said, nope, I don't think I could watch people be in pain. I don't think I could deal with the volume of people, you know, coming to the end of their life, the risk. You know, all of that. So I can tell you that is the kind of thing, the kind of adversity that I decided really early on can't do it.
Yeah.
And even in when we talk about what kind of adversity I can deal with, it actually took me some time to learn that failure in quote unquote failure in marketing and the things that we do, that thing of thinking you have a great idea, having it not, you know, pan out the way that you wanted it to pan out or not get the results that you wanted. It took me a little while to come to it, but I did eventually make the decision like, yeah, I can live with that. I worked through that is an eventuality every so often, and I can live with failure in that way.
Yeah.
There. That's my answer.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. Mine's, I guess, similar in that, well, I guess every poop sandwich is a poop sandwich, isn't it, Sue?
It's true.
Mine is like the creative challenge or the challenge of creation, which, like, I think I'm mostly talking about, like, the experience when someone has something that needs to be created, a design or, a campaign idea, whatever, you know, it could be something as simple as like one very specific design to some theme that could inform a whole bunch of work. But that moment where it's needed is when somebody says, I know I need this thing. I have a need in my head, or maybe even an initial idea in my head. I just have no idea how to make it real, how to make it look, how it should look, whatever. And then that's when like I can come in and take that problem and go and to like get stuck in it where you almost are in the same place as the client or the person asking you for their help, where you feel a little bit like, well, I don't even know where to go with this thing, you know, where it's almost like slow going or painful to get to something. Like that's the kind of poop sandwich I really like to eat, because I think it's extra fulfilling when you finally get to the creative idea. I mean, gosh, do I love to have an idea where there's a really solid case for the way it should look or feel, or, you know, even like some, you know, initial ideas that already have you down that road and things come together easily and naturally. Like, yeah, I love those too. Like those are fun projects, you know, where you're not constantly digging for the answer, but the one where you're constantly digging and working harder, like feels better when you get to the end, you know, especially you know, feels better for you because you know the work and time that you put into it. But then I think the extra sweet part about it is knowing that that person really felt like they were stuck and, you know, they didn't know what to do. So, you know, you were really helping someone that was like similarly stuck.
So. Yeah. Yeah. There is a beauty in the, I think of it as like the puzzle of what we do and being able to complete that puzzle, even if it's hard. And, you know, bonus points, because, you know, you are the one, you're the one doing that puzzle because someone asked you to help with it. So you're helping too.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Good answer. Good answer.
Good answer. Good answer. It's like a Family Feud episode up.
Yeah. Ben, what is true about you today that would make your 8-year-old self cry?
I think that my, this is sounds way more harsh than it is, but I think it's real. Like my work environment in that, like I'm at a desk all the time. I'm behind a screen almost constantly. I'm pretty sedentary, right? Like I think those things, I think my 8-year-old, like recess is my favorite subject, kind of kid, that would probably make him cry a little bit, you know? And I think I do my best, both with work and I actually just thought about it today. I got here a little early today. There was like 2 other cars in the parking lot. I parked in my normal spot, which is a little further away because those are usually the spaces, available after I get here, after kids are off to school and all that stuff. I parked in my same spot and I was like, oh, you know, creature of habit, you know, but then I was also thinking like, no, actually, like I could have parked anywhere. I chose to park there so that I could get a few extra steps into the office, you know, so like just tiny itty bitty little celebration, right? Like, so not only do I make up for it by parking a little further away, but also like when I'm not at work, except for maybe in the dead of winter, like I'm outside, like we're almost always outside. Our family is always outside, even if it's just like hanging out or we're like physically active, hiking and doing all those other outdoor things that we like to do. So that is not part of the question. You didn't need to know the justification for the thing that would make my 8-year-old happy.
The podcast didn't need to know, but you know me well enough to know I did need the justification. Right.
Yeah. So yeah, like that I didn't wind up doing a job where I was constantly out and about moving up and around or, you know, like, of course, on a sports field because I was a pro athlete or you know, all those things, right?
Right, yeah.
How about you? What would make 8-year-old Sue cry?
I think that probably the simplest answer is even though I ended up in a creative job. I don't have much time to play. I have to stay directed. And, you know, some projects, my boundaries are wider. But between work where you have, you know, those bumpers, like the bowling alley that you have to stay in and adult responsibilities and, you know, all of those things you have to do. I was an imaginative kid. I was a creative kid and, I was always like in my little brain.
Yeah.
And there just is not, I have to be much more like moored to reality. And I think that would make my 8-year-old self sad.
Sure.
To not be able to use my imagination as much.
Yeah. Well, the purpose of this episode isn't to solve all of these problems for ourselves and make our 8-year-old self not want to cry, but I think both of our answers, I can't help but think like, well, let's do something about that. Like there's no reason that I can't be out and about up and like more connected with nature as I'm working too, you know what I mean? Not all the time, of course, but more often than I am now. And same for you, right? Like, and I suppose, you know, with your answer related to like freedom and ability to use your imagination in a certain way, not all the time, but Mm-hmm. This maybe comes with leadership too, right? Like you just, some of those things go away as you grow in leadership, but also what's stopping us, right?
Right.
Besides ourselves to make, you know, 8-year-old Ben and Sue a little happier, you know?
Yeah. Well, and you know, and the, I think the point of this question when you're thinking about your life's purpose is to say, you know, what is 8-year-old you missing, mm-hmm. and how do you re-inject that?
Right.
And can you re-inject that? And it doesn't have to be in your work.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, for me, there is a natural place that imagination, creativity can live. Mm-hmm. And if I was mindful to give it more space, it's probably a natural benefit to the people we work with.
Yeah.
And possibly for you as well, like the thinking about your position as the leader of the CUSO and knowing, you know, there's a lesson to be learned there. Like, mm-hmm. what makes Ben as a human being happy is having more movement, having more outside. Not everyone on any given team is going to be the same way.
Right.
But is there a lesson in there to say like, ooh, how do we make things more flexible? And learn more about what the whole team, like what their 8-year-old selves would be happier with and incorporate that in our work or find ways to give more space, not in work, or, you know? Yeah. So I think, and are you making notes and everything?
Well, I'm bracketing this question because as you were giving your answer, I was like, dang it, we need to ask this to the whole team.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, just in your and I, both your and I's answer, like, I feel like, okay, like, a couple simple adjustments and we can at least make our 8-year-old self a little happier.
Right.
The same probably applies to everybody on the team.
Right.
And there's probably some similar answers where one small change in our office space or our day-to-day or whatever mm-hmm. means everybody can experience a little bit more joy, you know?
Right. So.
Cool. Okay. Sue, what makes you forget to eat and poop besides Stephen King novels?
I mean, that's a number that is high on the list. We've talked a lot, I think, in the past about that, like that flow state.
Yeah.
And it can vary. You know, I used to, probably a couple of years ago, maybe more, I would tell you the only time that I enter that flow state is like when I'm writing. And that is, at least in terms of work, that is like peak performance for me. And that's the only time it happens. And that's not necessarily true anymore. There are a lot of things that get me into that flow state, you know, some doing research for the podcast and some of the things, you know, even some of like the more coaching management-y things. The answer is there's a lot.
Yeah.
There are a lot of things that make me feel that way. Mm-hmm. But coming back to like circling it back around, let's do a callback to talking about solving that puzzle. Like anything related to, I have to figure this thing out. And that can be, I have to figure out how to make this scheduling work, or I have to figure out how to, you know, help this employee, whatever, work, you know, through this project. When I hit one of those puzzles, that's when like, I am not getting my recommended 8 glasses of water. I am, which is good because I'm also not going to the bathroom and I get really, you know, super, super focused.
Yeah.
What about you?
I think for me, most typically it's something creative is like what's putting me in that flow state where I'm forgetting about my bowels. But I think the other, I think like if you were to categorize what I'm working on, that I most often find myself in that place. It's something creative, which might be literally designing something. It could be even like, you know, not so much anymore because we've got great people on the team that do this kind of work. But, you know, I definitely remember sometimes being like in the depths of a website, like doing an update or, you know, bringing new content in or whatever, and just page after page, chunk of content after chunk of content, like just all of a sudden it's like, holy cow, like I just rebuilt this whole thing and forgot what time it was. So those are like the ones that quickly come to mind and I think are paired up with joy and happiness and like the kind of work that I do, easily justifying why I got there. But I think the other thing, which certainly can happen to the same kind of like creative projects and stuff, but happens more for me now today as I do less and less of that kind of work, is when I know, maybe not with 100% confidence or certainty, but darn near, that I'm working on the right thing, that that I'm working on the right priority. Because I think what prevents me from getting in the flow state often is like me questioning, like, gosh, is this what I should be working on right now? You know? And so your eyes kind of start to peer over to the email or to other work or your notebook or whatever. Mm-hmm. And you're just kind of like, as you're doing the thing that you're working on, you're constantly looking for the right thing to work on or maybe the next thing, whatever.
Right.
And that's keeping you out of, you know, the zone. You know? And so I think for me, I've definitely had some time where I'm not doing the sexiest work. I'm not doing the most fun work. I would never even sign up like to say, yep, for these 3 hours tonight with an extra cup of coffee and, you know, ignoring my family, I'm going to do this thing. Like, I wouldn't sign up for that too often. But when I know it's like, it's exactly what I need to be doing, it's top priority right now. And also because it's like a healthy priority and not like, oh, I'm just like super behind and now I have to do this thing, you know, that can get me in that zone really quickly and just like go all in. Kind of like what you were saying about how it can be a lot of things. Like, I think I can fall into that with any number of kind of work, but the creative stuff, I think, is the time where there's like perfect balance between priority, fulfillment, joy, and all of it happening at the same time, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. We've talked before about how some of the stuff that we do can seem like it can become really draining because it's these small steps and it's so hard to see progress because things, you know, certain things by nature of the project, by nature of the interaction behind the project or lack thereof.
Yeah.
It can feel really draining, but then there are moments where it's like if you can put that one block of time in, it's this huge step up,
yeah,
and it feels so good.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is one area where, although intense, when I don't want to do something, intense concentration can be challenging for me. That kind of moment where I go, yeah, but if I really knuckle down, this is behind me.
Yeah. Right. Yep. True.
It can feel so good. Yeah.
The hope with that can get you there.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Okay. Ben, how can you better embarrass yourself?
Do I need to do that better?
Yeah. You're not good at it. Do better. Because you still are pretty charismatic. You're, you know, reasonably good-looking guy. If you could look like a much bigger dork, everybody would appreciate it.
Yeah. Yeah, this is a tough one for me because I feel like I am quite often
like pretty embarrassing.
Pretty embarrassing, yeah. Or just admit, I don't know, this, I don't think it's all imposter syndrome or anything like that, but I think I'm quite often like in water that's a little bit too deep for me or something, you know what I mean? But also like, I'm a pretty good swimmer. So like, it's okay, you know? So I honestly, and maybe this is just personal insecurity coming out, I feel like I'm constantly embarrassing myself.
Interesting.
But maybe, you know, the charisma that you mentioned mm-hmm. is making it, covering it up, or, you know, making up for it or something.
Well, and I think that there is a distinction. The feeling of embarrassing yourself, you know, this article takes it really more from the negative side of that. I think you could also relate it to risk. So I think when people see you in pretty deep water, but also being a pretty good swimmer, they say, that's a guy that's willing to take a risk.
Yeah.
And so there's not necessarily embarrassment inherent in that.
Sure.
But, you know, this is in the article alludes to, doesn't just allude to, it says it straight out. And I don't know why I use the word alludes. But anyway, basically that there is this difference between things you don't do for good reasons and things you don't do for sort of bad reasons. Mm. So there are, it's asking the question to make the distinction. Do you not do that because, like, your family would be shamed?
Right, right.
Then that's maybe a bad reason. Like, well, a work thing. Like, if you don't knock over a convenience store because your family would be ashamed, that is the right reason to do right. it. Do not yeah. rob convenience stores. But yeah. if you don't take on a creative project or, I don't know, audition for the community theater or,
yeah.
I don't know,
yeah.
something like that, that is low risk, and you keep yourself from something you would love
mm-hmm.
because you think that your dad's going to say something at Thanksgiving, right? That's a bad reason.
Right.
But another, I think one of the other things he points out in there is if you decide you didn't do it because it jeopardizes time with your family
right.
or it would be, you know, it would hurt some other part of your life, mm-hmm. it's a good reason
right.
to be afraid to do it. Yep. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that most of the, you know, opportunities for embarrassment that come to mind for me are mostly justified by like time, mm-hmm. you know, and just my scarcity with young kids and everything right now. It's like, gosh, you know, I mean, when could I even do a thing? And I don't even have a specific example in mind. I suppose something that like I'm both interested in and I know I enjoy and I get like the adrenaline rush out of it and everything is like public speaking and, you know, leading or facilitating a group of people. And so there's probably more opportunity for me to do that either like self-created or by engaging with partners where, you know, the avenue for that to happen would exist. But with all of that, and here, this is me just justifying why I shouldn't be doing it.
Ooh.
Like there's a ton of prep, you know, like to do that well enough to only be moderately embarrassed or whatever. And I totally would be taking away time from either my family or work that has a higher priority right now. I think there's some version of that that happens in the not so distant future, you know?
Yeah.
But
yeah. Anyway. Yeah. So I think the lesson here is to keep considering it. Mm-hmm. Like, is it worth it?
Right.
To not do it. And yeah. And I don't think, now correct me if I'm wrong though. I don't think the act of doing it feels inherently embarrassing to you, like standing up in front of people.
Not always.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think, and again, this is where maybe I need a therapist to answer this question.
Okay.
You know, how much of this is like self insecurity, and how much of it is just like straight up like it can simplify that to embarrassment, you know?
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah, that's interesting. And then maybe my follow up question, if I were your therapist, would be, is the fact that you don't know if it is, if it's embarrassing or you don't really have the, you know, you feel unsure of yourself, correlated to you saying, well, you know, and there's not time and I can't make time for it. Like, is that all one big sort of mess?
Yeah, probably on some level. for sure. I think like specifically what I'm talking about, because I have had the opportunity to speak in front of people and facilitate workshops and do that kind of thing. I think after all of them, I have some feeling of like, oh man, I said that wrong, botched that. That could have gone better. If only I would have, you know, whatever. And your face almost gets a little red as you think about it.
Yeah.
You know? And I guess that, yeah, see, that's where maybe I'm just getting down into the weeds here and thinking about picking apart the word embarrassed, you know, and really it's like, yeah, I mean, I guess I'm embarrassed because like it could have gone better. I could have said it, I could have presented myself a different way, you know, whatever. But also maybe that's just learning.
Right.
You know, and like, how would I know that that was right or wrong unless I gave it my best shot with what I had at the time? And now I know next time it's going to be a little different, or it better be.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. So. Or not, because sometimes like there are certain things that words that are just hard to say if you can't like just I know I'm getting really granular in this whole presentation thing, but if you have to talk about something and you have a hard time saying a particular word that you can't avoid, like you're just forever going to stumble on it.
Yeah.
And you just have to decide that's a hard word.
Yeah.
That would choose your hard words. And don't act like an idiot when you're like, no, you know what? The word day is a really hard word. Don't do that. That's bad. Interesting. Very interesting.
Thanks for the free therapy. So,
yeah, okay.
Send me a bill if you need to. It's
one,
okay.
That's just one service I provide. Yeah, you know, and I was going to wait for you to ask the question, but I'll just answer it knowing that
it's your turn.
It's our format that this is. It's interesting that you say that particular thing, like that public speaking thing, because I feel really similarly. And also like going back to that, what are you not doing that your 8-year-old self, maybe not my 8-year-old self, my teenage self. I was in choir. I was in theater. I performed pretty much all year long for all of high school.
Yeah.
And I don't do any of that stuff anymore. And I think there was a time like when I was in training that, and I was doing that kind of presentation, that I channeled some of that, you know, desire to do that stuff. That it's still not the same thing.
Yeah.
But there is there is a major part of presentation is the performance aspect of it. So I honestly think we're pretty close to being on the same page here.
Yeah.
Like that is a thing that I would like to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I have any one of a million different excuses for not doing it.
Yeah.
And some of them, like if you actually think about, I could be exploring, you know, that creative part of me, the imagination that I'm looking for an outlet for outside of work. But have lots and lots of good reasons that don't have time, can't do, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't have energy, whatever.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, so fix that, will you?
Yep, on it.
Okay, thanks.
All right, Sue, next question. How are you going to save the world? This
one piece at a time. Yeah. Same way you eat an elephant.
Nice.
So, you know, this question comes back to a core belief of mine. And this is not a good answer. This is a terrible answer, but I'm going to give it to you anyway. One of my core beliefs is that all of us, everyone alive, one of our responsibilities as human beings is to make things better. Like this, you know, this concept of continuous unending improvement, that it is a core responsibility that everyone in the world has. Not everyone takes on that responsibility. And some people, I think, are for various reasons, are working contrary to that.
Yeah.
But when I think about how am I going to save the world, that is like that. That's my one little answer. Like that's what I believe about everyone. And I think trying to live that way myself and trying to help to the greatest extent I can, the people around me, embrace that as a responsibility and try, you know, because we can do what we can do in our corner of the world. And some of us can have much more influence than other people. It's still going, you know, to be this little bit of small, like you're going to recycle that water bottle. And like, that's just going to, it's one little tiny thing,
mm-hmm.
but also if everyone does it, it becomes a big thing.
Yeah.
You know, so that is my, I told you it's a terrible answer, but it is an answer mm-hmm. and it's what you're getting. What about you,
no,
Ben?
No, that's a good one.
How are you going to save the world? Fix this, fix what I just did.
Yeah. I think this is another one that we're on a pretty similar page about, you know, and hearing you talk about like the infinite continuous improvement and stuff. I think that whole idea is part of why I struggle with like the question or being concerned with life's purpose anyway. Cause I mean, here we are today talking about, you know, what would make our 8-year-old self cry. I'm guessing in 20, 25 years, we're going to be able to look back and, look at our current self and ask mm-hmm. the same question, like what would make your fill in the blank age self cry, because like things change, like life mm-hmm. changes, purpose changes, the planet changes, the world changes, right? So I think because of that, I mean, of course, like if like in the article, you know, the kid who knew that he wanted to be a senator at whatever age, right? Like that's awesome. And as the author mentioned, like that person's a freak. That doesn't happen too often. So like, congratulations if you're one of those people that when you were 6 years old, you knew what you wanted to do and you're doing it now. And also like, shame on you if your eyes aren't open to what's next.
Right.
You know, like even if you're Taylor friggin' Swift and you're the best in the world at what you're doing, like, I hope that your eyes are open to what's next for you, because the world isn't what it was when you were 6 when you decided you wanted to be a singer, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think that's why it's so important that people recycle the water bottle. You know, that's why people do all of those little things for people to help make the world a better place, because like the change is constant and the thing that we want to do, the job that we want to have, whatever, can't be the answer for all of the improvement that the world needs.
Mm-hmm.
So like, now, of course, should we have, you know, something we're really good at or something that we can best like apply ourselves to make the most change in things, like, yeah, for sure. And is that, and can that always be a work in progress? I believe, yeah. Yep. Sure can, you know,
mm-hmm.
And you know, to, I suppose the tricky part or what makes it frustrating for people is to never know that that's what you're best at or what you should be doing or whatever, but we could all probably use a little bit more confidence in ourselves and that what we're doing is right, because we've made the path here, you know,
mm-hmm.
maybe it's been influenced by some people and some things that are out of our control. And maybe if some of those things would have gone differently, we would be somewhere else right now, but
right
at the same time, we are where we are. So like, make the most of it. I'm not answering the question.
Yeah. Well, you see, you were supposed to, I don't know if I made my instructions clear. You were supposed to make it like someone answered this question, since I screwed it up.
Yeah. Well, good luck. Because I did not do that.
No, but I think you did.
Yeah, I think I did. And I do think, you know, using like my real life current status, I think that a way that I change the world is highly empowered by my employer and the fact mm-hmm. that I have a ton of flexibility to dedicate my time and my resources and my expertise to other things. Something as simple as sitting on a board to provide governance and guidance to an organization, or like tonight, I'll be coaching 8-year-old baseball tonight, and I know that I'm making an impact on
mm-hmm.
On those kids. And so, and then, you know, all of the things I do in the Rotary world and stuff that, you know, is definitely impacting people on the other side of the planet that I will never meet. and never know whether or not I actually helped them, but or you know, get the thanks for it, I guess, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that those are all examples in my life right now where I am changing the world, maybe, you know, in a way that doesn't make headlines or whatever.
Right. And
boy, if I had a choice, kind of like it that way.
So, yeah.
And I also think if you do it long enough and if you do it in the right way and, you know, you kind of like, again, take the path that comes at you, like the headlines come, the recognition mm-hmm. comes and all of that stuff. You know, if you're doing it in a real genuine way and not concerned about any of those things, you know.
Right. Yeah. Or they don't. And because you're not concerned about it, you have peace.
Exactly. Right. 100%.
Okay. That was a good one.
Wow, that's a big question, just saying.
How yeah, I know. I know. Don't blame me. Blame Mark Manson.
Thanks, Mark.
Ben, if you had to leave the house every day, all day, where would you go and what would you do? Or what activity would you choose to do above all others?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You have to leave.
Yeah.
Can't take your kids with you. You gotta go.
Mm-hmm.
You ain't gotta go home, but you can't stay right. here.
Yep. I think I would be doing, it's really tough for me to pick one. So one of two, I would be in nature. I would be hiking. I would be kayaking. I don't know. I would be tied to the planet
mm-hmm.
somehow, soaking it in. Or this is weird because it's not quite related, but it is outdoors at least. I'd be coaching something. I'd be coaching some sport. If I like just couldn't be at home, I would be, you know, in a gym, I would be on a field, I'd be mm-hmm. working to help people improve.
Yeah. Okay.
Managing a game, whatever.
I like it. That's a good, I mean, that's outside. I
yeah.
gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you want me to wait now while you ask me?
No, just go. No,
just
I'm
go.
Just kidding. Okay. Sue, if you had to leave the house.
So awkward.
Every day, all day.
Yeah. Yeah, so. Yeah, so. I think about this. This is actually a question I've asked myself. And it's related to retirement. Mm. What am I going to do? Because, and it's a ways off. But why do I want to retire? And what am I going to do when I do? Because even when there hasn't really been a time in my life when I have felt like, oh, well, I don't have to work.
Yeah.
But I can't picture not having some type of purpose like that.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so I assume that when I really think about my retirement plan, what that means is that opens up more time to volunteer. So I think right now, given all of the time that I have at work, all of the money that I would make, you know, so yeah. like yeah. needs are covered
yeah.
and I have to leave the house and go and do something, I would find like... There are volunteer opportunities that I think I have stayed away from because they require a higher level of emotional commitment, physical presence.
Yeah.
And that if I was going to do them, I would want to do them as fully as I could.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the kind of thing I would be looking for.
Yeah.
You know, and if you ask me what that might specifically be, I think about getting involved with domestic violence survivors and something like that. Cause you know, there are certain kinds of volunteer work where if you are going to deal with people, you have to be a stable person in their lives because they're already so hurt. You know,
mm-hmm.
so that's one that I'm like, I could, there are opportunities, but I've never really felt like I have the time commitment to learn what I need to learn to do it well
yeah.
and be there
right.
the amount of time that I want to commit to it.
Yeah. And be there in all the ways that you need
right,
to be there
right.
more than just time. Yeah.
Yeah. So That's my answer.
You're going to do it. I don't know when or for who or what, but
yeah.
Yeah. And that's going to be awesome.
Are you firing me?
No.
Now's not a good time.
Yeah.
I should tell you.
I am not forcing you into retirement.
Okay. So. Although like Monday, that's when, if you do ever just, and I'm going to record this. I want to make sure you know. I do it on a Monday. Don't make me wait till a Friday.
Oh.
Don't make me put in a whole week. I want to go.
This would have been nice to know.
And have the rest of my week off. Okay.
Good to know. Got it.
Yep. Mental note. So there are two things, and this is aside from, I'm going to get this on recording too. Aside from the podcast, today Ben learned that because it's my 25th anniversary, I want a big party this
right.
year.
Yes.
So those are the two things to know.
Yeah, I've got some.
If my 25th things. Anniversary is on a Friday, don't fire me until the following Monday.
Yeah, got some important notes from today already.
Yeah, write that down.
All right, Sue, if you knew you were going to die in a year, what would you do and how would you want to be remembered?
Man, thanks for the easy question. Mm-hmm. Let me toss something out. Yeah. I think a lot about in my work, in what we do here, in the things that just because, you know, speaking of 25 years, just because I've been here 25 years, the things that are like locked in my brain that we didn't keep records of, we didn't, you know, there are just experiences that I've had that might not change what other people would do going forward, but also they might inform, at least be that kind of thing where they can go, oh, it's possible for people to react that way. And not, if I could save somebody younger than me from being like, oh, I suck at my job, everything is terrible, by saying, oh yeah, it's like that sometimes.
Yeah.
I would love to be able to do that with some of that knowledge. And then I think about my kids and my granddaughter and the fact that there are people and experiences that are in their family that they've never known and never will.
Hmm.
And that especially, you know, my dad's older, and sometimes we'll be like sitting with him or doing something with him and he will just tell a story. Like this weekend we saw a crow as we were sitting outside and he told us a story about one time he and his friends were skipping school. And they were driving down some old dirt road and there was a Model A, because my dad's a Model A guy, in this old guy's backyard. So they went to talk to him because this is the way my dad has always been. If he sees something like sitting out in the woods like that, he'll just go knock on the door and be like, what's going on with that?
Yeah.
And they went to go and talk to this guy and he showed them a clipping. I can't remember the name of the crow. The crow had a name. Charlie? I don't know, but this man had a famous talking crow.
Hmm.
Crows can talk. They can mimic voices. And this guy had, years before, had a talking crow. And just out of nowhere, my dad told us this. It's never a story ever heard from my dad before.
Yeah.
And so I think about, number one, what do we lose? What things do we lose? Have we lost from the people who have already gone?
Mm-hmm.
And do we lose from him? And then like the next generation, what sort of the same thing I'm talking about at work, what could I have told my kids? What could my kids have told my granddaughter?
Yeah.
And on and on and on that they could go, oh, yep. It's like that sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And just have that kind of peace or know something about like my grandparents and my great grandparents. And so That is a theme that kind of has been following me around the last few years.
Yeah.
And so when I think about what I would do, I'm getting back to the point. If I was going to die in a year, I'd be like, Ben, I'm done.
Yeah.
I'm done working. And I have to figure out how I make this happen.
Mm-hmm.
I have to, well, maybe I'm not done working because my first thing I have to do is I have to figure out how I get all of this to everyone here at work that I'm leaving behind.
Yeah, right.
And I have to figure that out for my family. So that's what I'm going to spend the next year on.
Mm-hmm.
And just make a record of whatever that is so that I can feel like I've done my best that way.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting how much like legacy / heritage is in your answer, you know? I mean, information, maybe driven by information, but yeah, it's just, it's interesting.
It repeats. That's the thing that if I could tell anybody, like any young person coming into the whole organization or into our department, like there are cycles, it's going to repeat.
Yeah.
You are going to come back across these things. So pay attention to how you solved it because it's coming back.
Yeah.
And if you solved it, then that informs that. If you didn't solve it, then figure that out too.
Right. Yeah.
But yeah. Okay. I'm done. I'm all done. What about you if you're going to die in a year?
Yeah. It's really tough to follow your answer. I mean,
I really outdid myself.
What instantly comes to mind for me are, you know, all of the cliche things like traveling and spending time with family, right? Which, yep, that's what I'd want to do, and honestly, what I'd want to be remembered for. And that, like, those were the choices that I made, was like to dedicate that last year to my family and everything. But then there's like this mentorship. Mentorship is the word that like kept sticking with me when I was thinking about this answer, which would be focused on my family, you know, like, what can I tell my kids in the next year that can help, you know, give them all the advice that they're not going to have after that year? And more than like advice, like do it this way, don't do it that way, but like what stories can they hear from me, whatever, that they can decide later with whatever information I just shared with them. And I suppose, because even though the clock would be ticking and we would all know about this year and everything, neither of them are going to want me around. None of them are going to want me around 365 days, 24/7 for the next year either. So I'm going to have to dedicate some time elsewhere. So I would want to make some really conscious decisions about like where else that mentorship might be most valuable, or my service, my experience, my knowledge, my information could be most valuable. And yeah, I think some of it at work for sure. But also, and I don't want to devalue myself, like work will be fine. You know, like everybody's going to be fine. So like, you know,
I won't. Yeah, I won't. No, I'm not going to be fine. Just so we're clear.
Okay. Thanks for letting me. Okay, so I'll spend some time with you.
Yeah. Please. But yeah. You didn't mention me.
But then, yeah, you know what, like, so I'm not answering the question. This is definitely something that is unsolved. And but yeah, what other people, groups, organizations would I want to be around and maybe even still learn from in that last year, so that I could share something relevant, an observation even, or an experience, a story. But yeah, it'd be, yeah, I'm trying to make my answer more awesome than just I'd be with my family all the time.
Yeah. But yeah, well, and I was a little torn, because if I had all the money that I needed, I, like, same as you, I would want to travel. Mm-hmm. I would be like, where does everybody want to go?
Yeah.
And let's make those memories and things. And fortunately, that is a thing to some extent we're already focused on, having experiences rather than buying things and, you know, that sort of attitude.
Yeah.
But you know what occurs to me as you're saying, as we're talking this particular thing through, is that I think that this is why writing this book feels so important to me, because this, like, it's one that, and I'm fine. Yeah. in case that's your next question, but just that feeling of like, there is so much that we have learned and can share.
And have already shared.
And if we could start to get that in a place where it's easy for people to consume, it is helpful, and people don't have to wait. And I don't know who these theoretical people are, but people don't have to wait for it to like be meted out or the situation calls for it, and now you get this piece of information.
Right.
Yeah. You know, that like that is a real driving force behind doing this. This is just, it's just one lens to look at that whole thing through.
Yeah.
But it's sort of serving this purpose of, what do we know? Mm-hmm. How can we get that information to people so they can make their choices from it?
Yeah. Awesome.
What a place to wrap up.
Right.
So thank you for being with us and listening to all of this. I always, when we hit stuff like that, where it's like, oh, let's talk about if we're going to die.
Yeah.
I always wonder what that does to people who are just listening. They're like, what am I listening to again?
Well, hey, hearing you talk about like the travel and, you know, experiences over gifts and stuff, and even, you know, me sharing a little bit about like what I would do if I had a year left and everything, it makes me think about like the bit of traveling that we're doing now. And especially with young kids and stuff, like it's really easy to feel like we just got to get to the place so we can do the thing, you know? And it's really easy to forget about the 2 hours that you're spending driving to the place as like a really important moment and really important part of the process, because you need to do that to get there. But, you know, thinking of like, okay, if I wanted to spend that last year traveling and stuff, how much time would I spend on an airplane, in a car, whatever, you know? And that's a lot of time. So like, what are you going to do with that to make it mean something, or, you know, be worth any of that last year of your time? So like, I'm thinking right now, like, I'm going to be spending some time with family in the car this weekend. Like, how can I maximize that, you know, and not make it just like the thing we have to do to get to the place, which is then going to be the experience. Like, yeah. So anyway, as much as like, you know, you maybe feel a little uneasy to ask questions about that and everything, like, I feel like I got some takeaways just having the conversation with you. I hope you did too. I'm sure our listeners do too.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to just say one more thing and then we can wrap up. I swear to God. because when you said that, when I was raising my kids, I didn't realize it until my granddaughter was born. I spent so much time like wishing time away. Mm. Oh, we just have to get to bedtime.
Yeah.
Oh, we just have to get to this thing. Like, and just wanting that to go fast because I was in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to get them to go to sleep and all of these things.
For sure.
And when my granddaughter was born, and you know, the circumstances were not easy breezy.
Yeah.
But she was living with us when she was born, and her mom needed help.
Yeah.
And I got that sort of do-over, and that was when the moment when I'm like, my kids, I wish this away.
Right.
I wanted somebody to come and take the baby. Yeah. I couldn't, you know.
Yeah.
And it was this heavy weight all of the time of, we gotta get to bedtime. We gotta do, you know. So to have that to do over, be like, nope, I'm cool. I'll just sit here. Like, I'll just rock this baby until, you know, if they're only gonna sleep, if I rock them, I'll rock them for 3 or 4 hours. Right. That's fine.
Yeah.
Because I get the chance to do that now, and I know how dumb I was when I was 25 and trying to make this go away.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So there, that's my big life advice for you. And that is, rock my granddaughter. it's going to be complicated. She's 9, but do it anyway.
Good luck to you.
Yes. Okay. Now we wrap up.
All right.
And now we say we are so excited for you two joining us on this journey and going through these thoughts and feelings and all of this good stuff that is eventually going to become a book. You can learn more about us. You can learn more about this book project and learn more about Exclamation at exclamationcuso.com. Check us out at our blog. Do all of the things.
Do them all.
Do them all.
Thanks, Sue. Thank you, friends, for tuning in. Be awesome. We'll see you next time.
The Awesomeology Podcast is a production of Exclamation Services. Thanks to Nick Mulliver for sound production and Kylie Ganther for our cover artwork.
Executive producers are me, Ben Bauer, and my friend, Suzanne Campbell.